I've been joined this morning by Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds. Governor, good to have you on here again. Unfortunately, we have to do this over the phone. I always enjoy it when you make a stop in Lamar's and stop by our offices here at KLEM. But let's talk a little bit about some of the things happening in the news. And obviously, our attention is and our hearts go out to everybody that's been affected on the floods in southwest Iowa and even to our neighbors in Nebraska and Missouri and others as well. But what is the latest that is happening there as far as maybe state relief funds or whatever? What's going on?
Yeah. Well, first of all, our hearts and prayers do go out to the people in southwest Iowa and all of those who have been impacted by the catastrophic flood that we've seen along the Missouri River. We are continuing to work with the impacted areas on a daily basis. We were able to do the governor's disaster proclamation. We were able to expedite the presidential declaration, which I had one individual from Homeland Security say, in the 25 years I've been working in this agency, I have never seen a turnaround that fast, and that is a compliment to our emergency managers in every one of the counties that have been impacted, for them to do the assessment and for the team to put that together, get it to the president, and then to have him authorize that and okay that within about 20, 24, 48 hours was just so appreciated, and it does allow for individual assistance for five counties along the Missouri. And so we held a meeting with the four governors that are impacted from the flooding along the Missouri, Governor Ricketts, Governor Parsons, and Governor Kelly wasn't able to make it from Kansas but will be part of the team. And we met with the Army Corps of Engineers to ask for answers, to look at what we were going to do in the short term and the long term. The problem is we have, 53 levees along the Missouri enough that have been breached or damaged. 44 plus are on the Iowa side. Some are just, it's just unbelievable the damage that's been done. So we need to figure out, we still have water coming in four of the areas, so we need to figure out how to get that stopped. So we stop the inflow so we can start to drain some of the water that's still standing and somewhat start to prepare for the season that we're just entering into. So, when we met with the Corps, we asked for a regional approach. We think that that's extremely important, that we don't fix Nebraska side and dump on Iowa or vice versa and then think about our people downstream. So we're going to continue to look for opportunities to do that or insist on that, to streamline the process, to make sure that the core river management is flood protection. That should be the number one priority. We should never lose sight of that. And if we take care of that, then everything else takes care of itself. But it should be people and communities, and that should be the number one priority. And then as we're fixing and finding solutions to the levee breaches or the ones that have been compromised, we need to make sure that anything that's temporary is considered part of a long-term fix. Then my team met down in Malvern on Monday, and with that we had all of the individual levee district representatives there, along with Homeland Security, Department of Transportation, Army Corps of Engineers, and DNR, to talk about how we coordinate that, what is the, again, the short-term goals, and then as we move into the long-term. And so those three meetings have kind of helped give us an idea of where the funding buckets are from the federal level and what we need to do from a state perspective, working with our local governments that have been impacted. And so we'll be putting out, I think we're doing a press conference on Monday that will walk through what our plans are moving forward.
All right. Governor, going back to your meeting with Governor Ricketts and also Governor Parsons with the Army Corps of Engineers, it's kind of sounded like, from my observation after that meeting, that the three governors, yourself included, of course, although you were pleased to have the opportunity to visit with the Army Corps of Engineers, but maybe you walked away a little bit disappointed or frustrated, or, and so I was wondering what kind of cooperation did the Army Corps of Engineers offer you and the other governors?
Yeah, well, I think there were still a lot of questions, probably more questions than answers that we had coming out of that. When they say we're bound by what, criteria we have placed upon us. So one of the main things that we said to them was we're going to be more involved. We're asking for more flexibility from the state level. If you're saying you can only build back to where the levee was at, and you can't go any higher, for instance, that's an example, if you think that we need to, or you're saying we're no longer going to put money into a levee like they did in Hamburg, Ditch 6, and then after the incidents have the Corps come in and say we need to tear it down. So we can't keep thinking like that. We can't keep doing the same thing and expecting different results. So one of the things that we asked for them, and we'll be meeting with them again in the next couple weeks, who do we need to talk to get that changed? What, you know, is it Congress? Is it the president? Is it, you know, who is determining the guidelines that you have to operate in, and how do we go about getting that changed, and who do we need to be talking to give us some flexibility, and who do we need to talk to about making sure that these eight priorities or purposes that they're operating under now, that's just ridiculous. If you have eight, you have none. So we need to refocus, make sure it's flood protection, make sure we're focusing on people and communities, and they need to be the priority going forward. And so hopefully they'll have some better information for us when we get back with them in the next couple weeks. I was impressed. I mean, the Corps was at the meeting on Monday, and they were able to, again, walk through the four levees that they're going to focus on and the major breaches. One of them is 72 feet deep, and it's 4 to 5 football fields long. So, I mean, these are really catastrophic breaches that are going to take, you know, it's going to take a lot just to get them done. So this is going to be, we got a long haul ahead of us, but we're going to try to do things differently, be more streamlined in the process, be more innovative, and look at different ways that we can put in place a system that we're not dealing with this every 3 years.
Okay. Let me shift our focus just slightly. The legislature is about to close, but they're still having to deal with trying to come up with some type of a financial assistance plan to help all those affected by the flooding, particularly, you know, the people, the community of Hamburg, the community of Hornick, and others that were evacuated and their homes were inundated with water, as well as also farmers that were severely hurt. But I guess my question is there enough money right now that will be able to supply or go to this disaster program and assistance, or will the legislature have to, you know, I guess if you want to say, borrow from Peter to give to Paul, take money away from other programs, maybe to make sure that there's money available for the financial relief assistance?
Yeah, and that's what we'll lay out on Monday, Dennis. So, you know, So it's a combination of all of that, and we have to be very strategic and thoughtful about how we move through this, because sometimes it falls under the FEMA bucket, sometimes it falls under the Corps bucket, sometimes it falls under USDA, Small Business Administration, HUD, and then there's always a match, and so sometimes under FEMA it's 90-10, sometimes under the Corps it's 75-25. So most of the time when we're repairing or relocating or doing flood mitigation, there is a match, and that's a match between the local government and the state. And so we're looking at the existing funds. We're looking at existing legislation. We'll get this done while the legislature is still in session. We hope to do it next week when we lay out what the need is. But we also have to balance and be careful. You know, we can't have FEMA coming in and just pushing this all on the state. They have a responsibility to help with this disaster as well. They're just not very timely in when they're able to allocate the funds. And so in the interim, we have to figure out how we can stand these communities back up. We can assure businesses that are trying to make the decision whether they should go back in or, you know, stay. And so we need to put some kind of a system in place that gives them the assurance that they're not going to be dealing with this in another year, another 2 years. So that's part of what we're working on. And looking for what our available funds are. We've got, you know, pretty good ending balance. We have an emergency fund that we can tap into, but that's some of the things that we're taking a look at as we move forward.
All right. Governor, if you might recall, when you had your news conference at the Sioux City Airport, I, among other questions, I asked you the question as to whether or not the state may need to look at moving some of these communities. And I'm looking at specifically Hamburg. They were hit hard in 2011. Now they turn around and they got hit hard again. I have a friend that lives down there who has not been able to get back to her home, and it's now been almost a month, I guess. Uh-huh. Is it time to look at the possibility of actually moving the community? I know that that has happened in eastern Iowa after floods in the 80s or early 90s or whatever it was. I believe the community was Chelsea, that they actually moved it up the hill, I guess, if you will.
Yeah,
so is there,
you know. Oh, excuse me.
Go ahead.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry. No, that's my fault. Boy, if you talk to the mayor and you talk to the people down there, I know it's just really tough, and they're dealing with a lot right now. Two-thirds of the city was wiped out, and so they're, you know, we're cleaning up, we're moving out debris, they're looking for options. For instance, in some of the areas that the southern part of the town, you know, is there some land up on the northern side? So they're having all of those conversations, and are there things that we can do to help, you know, them through that process? I know in Glenwood, the board was talking about, are there areas that we could take advantage of TIF and, again, you know, move some of our homes that continue to be impacted. So those are all conversations that they're having, and that's part of, you know, the long-term plan going forward. They feel very strongly, and, who knows, but if they would have been able to keep that levee there, that it would have protected the community. And so as we're working to fix, it's called Ditch 6, that's the main levee down there that protects the town of Hamburg, you know, that's one of the areas that we're going to try to go in there and help work with the Corps and get something done there. So I think once we start doing things like that, then they'll have a better feeling of what their next steps are for the community. But from what I've seen and the individuals I talk to, the resiliency and the determination to really take a look at what they can do with this disaster and maybe turn it into an opportunity to, do some different things with the town. That's, I think, some of the conversations that they're having. But, you know, they're still in survival mode right now. I mean, we're early on in the season, and we've got to get those, the four breaches that I highlighted. We need to get those plugged. We need to stop the water from coming in. We need to drain the water that's still standing. That allows us to get a better assessment. And then in the middle of all of that, we are in recovery mode as well. So we're working simultaneously to address all of those.
All right, Governor. Let's shift our focus. The legislature is only a few weeks away from wrapping up its session. Your general thoughts about what has come out so far, and I guess what do you think about the actions that the legislature has taken?
Well, you know, pace is going to pick up. I think they're ahead of schedule. I was proud of the fact that we were able to get the funding for state supplemental aid done within the first 30 days. So school districts across the state had they knew what they were going to get so that they could set their budget. So that was, one of our key priorities as we began the session, and we were able to get that done. Proud of the, you know, historic funding that we continue to put into K-12 education. And really, I mean, just the innovative things that I am seeing happening with our teachers in classrooms all across the state. I'm excited about what's happening in K-12 education. As far as my priorities are concerned, I think Empower Rural Iowa just came out of committee yesterday in the House, so excited about that. I'm passionate about that. I think there's a lot of support in the legislature to really, you know, help build our workforce, help build housing. Broadband connectivity is extremely important. I'm pushing the House and the Senate. I ask for $10 million over 2 years. I think right now we're working on the funding, but I think it's imperative that we do the $10 million. It'll leverage $120 million in private sector, and if we want to scale what we're seeing happening, you know, we have to make an investment in that. I think the children's mental health, I think that's moving along. It's out of the House and in the Senate, so I think we're going to be able to get that done. And Future Ready Iowa funding looks good. Number one barrier to economic growth and really opportunities for Iowans is helping Iowans skill up and making sure that our students that are in, you know, middle school and high school know that there's many paths to a great career, and those careers are right here in Iowa. So Future Ready Iowa, I think, is a pretty good state. Empower Rural Iowa is in good shape. Children's mental health is in good shape. I'm still working on the Judicial Nominating Commission. I think that's extremely important. It passed Every single legislator in the Senate voted for it. It's in the House right now. I think we want a system that better represents all Iowans and not just a special interest group of about 1,000 to 1,500 people selecting our judges. I don't think that's reflective or representative of all Iowans. We've made some significant compromises on that. So the biggest change to what we're asking for is just the fact that we want better representation for the individuals that are electing the 8 members to the 16-member Judicial Nominating Commission instead of, 1,000 to 1,500 lawyers that have historically been picking the individuals to the 8 individuals to sit on that commission. Felon voting, I was disappointed with that. I believe that it should go to a vote of the people. We're not done. The timeline is still the same, and the legislators are, we're going to continue to work together. I've never said that there shouldn't be exemptions. I believe there should. For instance, murder, it's just what degree and what are those exemptions. And so we'll continue to work with the legislature. And I think once we have that established, then hopefully we'll be able to get that through. They're not okaying it. They're just saying we're going to allow this to go to a vote of the people. So ultimately it will be Iowans that will decide that, and I believe that they believe in redemption for certain felony charges.
All right. Governor, my last question deals with the Medicaid and the Medicare program.
Yep.
We've, of course, under Governor Branstad, the state went ahead and privatized the program, which probably was necessary because of it was just costing the state way, way too much money. But there's been, if there's anything we can say about being consistent of the program, it's been inconsistent. And the fact that we've seen healthcare providers come and go, and that gives Iowans reason to be concerned and worry is like, okay, who's going to be covering my medical expenses, mm-hmm. this type of thing. So what is the state doing? What are you doing, I guess, to try and lure in additional healthcare providers and hopefully that they will stay over the long haul? And why is it that these healthcare providers are leaving the state?
Yeah, well, we're just in our third year, so it's a relatively new program, and it was a significant shift. I think people lose sight of the fact that, it is such a new program, and it was just such a shift in the way that services had been provided. And we're, the majority of states have moved to managed care because they know that fee-for-service wasn't sustainable. There's just no patient outcome base. There wasn't any accountability. They just were basically paying the claims, and there was a lot of problems with that. And if you talk to people that are honest about that were in the system, they would say it wasn't perfect either. I said when I was sworn in a year ago, prior to the election, that when I took a look at this, there were mistakes that were made at the beginning, and that's really caused this to be a very, very bumpy rollout. Budgets were really tight when we did implement it, but, we implemented in 6 months. We probably underfunded the program, and we did it all at once. And so we've kind of paid a price for doing that. But we really have, I think, with this year, we have righted the ship, and we are, ready to move forward. So we have Amerigroup that's currently in the program. We have Iowa Total Care that will be coming on July. Last time when one of the managed care providers stepped out, we had a 30-day notice, and so that was an extremely tight timeline to help Iowans, redistribute and to get them lined up with one of the managed care providers and make sure that, their provider was in network with the physicians that they were seeing. And so this time we have a couple more months. It'll at least be through the end of June, if not a little bit longer. We're working really hard to minimize the disruption as much as possible, especially for our most vulnerable Iowans. That's a priority and will continue to be a priority. We heard the same things when we lost the other one. Oh, it's going to just really be a mess, and people were really concerned, and it wasn't as bad as people, thought it would be. Now, it's not ideal. I mean, this isn't something I wanted to do. We were going to have to do a readjustment anyway because we had a new company coming in, but I tell you, the demands that they made were unacceptable, unsustainable. When they said that a non-negotiable for them was to take the accountability piece out, I just know. I just, if that was not fair to Iowans, and it just we had to just part ways. So they are going to work with us to transition their population. I'm grateful to them for doing that. They're working with the two other providers as far as our case managers because there'll be opportunities for them. You know, they'll be needing case managers, Iowa Total Care will, as they come into the system. And hopefully with the supplemental, we now know what it costs to deliver the services. We can really get this system on a path that helps add value, that works with our Medicaid population, helps them get an annual physical, helps them identify chronic illness, and helps them, you know, helps Iowans to have a more a better healthy population. And so I know that's ultimately what we're all working towards.
All right. Well, Governor, thank you for joining me this morning, and I just want to remind you to mark down on your calendar Saturday, June 15th. That is when the Lamars were celebrating our sesquicentennial, also ice cream days, and the ice cream parlor will open again after its $4 million renovation. So,
oh, I can't wait to come up there.
We'd like to have you come
that.
Up here. If I remember right, and I'm trying to remember, maybe this was Governor Branstad. I was thinking that you like mint chocolate chip ice cream.
I do like it, but that is former Governor Branstad's favorite ice cream,
okay.
Mint chocolate chip. I'm not sure. I don't think there's an ice cream that I don't like. So, you know, I could work my way down the counter and be happy with almost all of them. Maybe bubble gum or something like that. I probably wouldn't, but other
Worthy
than that,
cake or
I
anything.
Love ice cream. Yeah. And to your listeners, I want to tell you, you should be proud of Dennis because every time that I have been in front of him, he has reminded me about June 15th. It is on the calendar. We're going to do everything we can to get there. So you are doing your work to get us there. So thank you for doing that.
All right. Well, thank you, Governor, and have a good day. Appreciate
you
your comments.
Yep.